Now, but before we begin talking about your work during the war years and that time, I would like to ask you how your children were with the divorce and with you leaving your husband and moving to California, if that was disruptive to them at all.
It upset them, but I didn't get the divorce until after the war was over. He stayed back there and worked, and I stayed out here. And I bought a small house, and the kids and I lived there. And we did very well for ourselves. One of my sons was very upset about it, and he just planned in so many ways trying to get his father and I back together again, but I, under no circumstances, was I going back. And his father came out two or three times trying to talk me into going back. I could not face going back and living with an alcoholic. There's just no way. I would much rather have gone on alone the way I did than put up with anybody that drank as much as he did.
Were the kids aware of his drinking?
No. Not until after they got up in their late teens and could see what he was doing. They all spent some time around him later, but every one of them found out that he was numb from alcohol most of the time. He wasn't one that staggered and fell down or anything like that, but his mind wandered in. He told the most ungodly lies you ever heard in your life. And he used to say, I asked him one time, why do you lie to the kids that way? And he'd say, it makes good listening. It's his idea of entertaining the kids, I guess. He didn't want to support them either. After we came out here, he said he didn't have to, that I had left him. And I went back to Michigan and got my divorce and after the war was over, and the court told him that he had to support the kids. He still put up a fuss, but the California court and the Michigan courts collaborate, and he paid.
But he didn't pay during the war years?
No. No, he gave me nothing during the war years. And now it's funny to hear the kids talk about it, because it seems as if even when they were smaller, they knew that he was phony. And he didn't mean what he said. He never kept a promise that he'd make to them or anything like that. He didn't want a divorce. He was safe. He could run around and do everything he wanted. As long as he was still married, he wouldn't get entangled too deep with some other woman. But after I finally got the divorce, he did. He married another woman with four kids that were about just about the age of ours. And he went through the whole teenage bit that I had. And he died, I don't know how long ago. His alcoholism finally caught up with him, and he had a heart attack. He's dead when they got him to the hospital. He drank to drown his worries. I don't know what he worried about. He never talked about it. And I was never sorry that I didn't go back, ever. That was one thing I told him when I left, that was it. He could have Michigan, so could the Indians. I didn't want it. And I still feel that way. I went back to Michigan last spring, and I still say the Indians can have it.
That your family had already moved back to California.
My mother and father had.
Where did they live?
Oh, they lived up at, my grandmother owned two cabins in Big Bear, and they lived up there for 2-3 years. And then they came down and bought a small chicken ranch in Baldwin Park. And they lived there for about, I don't know, 15, 20 years, something like that, till Dad's emphysema got so bad he couldn't help anymore with the chickens. Chicken dust got, it's very bad for emphysema. He only lived 2 or 3 years after they sold their chicken ranch.
Now, when you moved to California with the children, that was the end. 1943, about, did you move in with your parents?
Yes, I lived with my folks for, 1 year. And then I bought a small house in Artesia. And the kids and I lived down there.
How were you able to buy the house?
Very easy. I had no problem. I had no problem whatsoever getting credit. I bought the house. It was a small stucco house, a new house that was unfinished inside. My father was a carpenter. He came down and helped me finish it up. And then later, after the war, we added on 2 bedrooms. And I had no problem getting credit. I bought refrigerators. I bought cars. I had no problem. That is what I have often wondered about women complaining that they can't get credit. As long as I had a job and a steady paycheck, I had no problems at all. And I always worked. It was very, very, very short times that I was out of work.
You started to tell me that you'd been out here about 3 weeks when you decided it was time to go to work.
Well, I was at living with my mother and father in Baldwin Park. I didn't have a car then. And I knew nothing about the area whatsoever. But you could take the red car, the old red car from Baldwin Park, downtown Los Angeles, change to the Long Beach car, go downtown Long Beach to Douglas had an employment office downtown. I don't remember what street it was on. Anyway, it was right downtown, and I went in and filled out an application and it was processed so fast that before I knew it, I was out at the Long Beach plant on Lakewood Boulevard going through a physical. And I had no problem with that, as long as we used to laugh, as long as you could stand up and were still warm, they'll put you to work. They wanted me to come to work the next day. That was on a Wednesday, and I said no, I wouldn't start until Monday. Well, they argued the point, but I didn't start work until Monday. A few things I wanted to do before I went to work, and we worked 6 days a week, so I knew if I didn't get things done before, I'd never get it done after.
What made you choose Douglas Long Beach to work?
My father was working there at that time. He was on the afternoon shift, so I took the afternoon shift. And I worked afternoons till the war was over. I went in on the middle of September, and I didn't, at one time they wanted me to work graveyard. I worked graveyard for about 2 months, but I couldn't stand it. I didn't get any sleep, so I went back on second shift. And it was funny because the fact that I had worked a year at Willow Run, I was hired in at the top of the B classification, and I was making more money than my father was. And he was working in maintenance. And my father, so help me, was more chauvinistic than I thought. It killed his pride to think that I could come out here and get a job that paid more than him. Because my father could do anything. He was one of those men that he could just, with his tools, he could build anything. He could do anything. And he told him he had to have more money. And he only worked there about 3 months after I went to work, and then he quit. I kept telling him, sure, they'd get him more money, but he never got it. So he quit and went back to building houses for himself.
What was the interview process like that you went through?
It was very, very simple. I found out that I'd worked a year at Willow Run. They didn't care whether the application was all filled out or not. They knew that I had to have some experience or I wouldn't have been at Willow Run that long. And when I did go to work, I was put right out on the floor with a, I don't know whether you know what the jigs, what they called the jigs or not, but that was the piece of machinery that you assembled your parts in and drilled in. Got them ready for the riveters, and I was put on one that built air ducts for the C. Oh, the one they built 3,000 of, DC-3s, that's what we were building, and I built the air ducts, or drilled the air ducts and processed them for the engines on the DC-3. But I enjoyed that. I enjoyed all kinds of the work that I did down there because it gave me something to do with my hands. I should have been born a boy. I really did like working.
Usually I ask women what their expectations are going into the plant before they've been there. And you had a year's experience at Willow Run, so maybe I should ask you that about your Willow Run experience, if you could have higher expectations.
No. During the war, you didn't expect much of anything. You just went in and did what you were told, and if they wanted to move you to another job, well, that was their prerogative. Advancements were hard to come by. It seemed like I got every new job that came into the area. When I complained about it, my assistant foreman said, "Look, I've never given you anything yet you couldn't handle. Quit worrying about it." I had the idea that maybe it was because he was dissatisfied with my work or something, but it wasn't that at all. And there were very, very few men. We had a lead man. We had an assistant foreman that was a man, and our foreman, of course. But there were no men working on the job with us in the small parts. Now, there were quite a few men in other areas of the plant, but not where I worked.
What was the attitude of those men that were, I guess they would be all supervisory, about?
Their attitudes were friendly. I mean, it was like one big family most of the time. There's always some animosity when you get a large gang of women together working. Some of them are always getting their feelings hurt, slighted over something, but I had no problems like that. I had no problems getting along with any of them down there. When I went to work there, I swore very little. My father was born and raised in Kansas, and I had been exposed to all the cuss words in the book. And there was an elderly lady worked in there. I was in my early 30s when I went in there. And this woman must have been close to 60, a white-haired, beautiful old lady. And when I would hurt myself or anything, I'd say, "Marie, swear for me." And man, could she swear. The most angelic face you ever saw, but oh, she could swear. I still didn't swear until, several years after that before I got down to holding my own. Then we closed out the DC-3, and we started on the A-26 bomber.
And did you always do that kind of preparing for
the
theater?
When I went to work on the air deck, I always was quite fast with my hands. On the day shift, they had a man that did the same job. We were to do 8 air decks a day. And before I had been on it very long, I was getting mine done by dinner time, lunchtime. Then I was all over the area. I learned to shoot rivets and buck rivets, run errands for the boss, and did everything else in the afternoon. The man on days didn't like it at all. Made him look bad. But I learned to do a lot of other jobs while I, my spare time. He was the only one that I ever had, really had words with. Because he said it was stupid to work that hard, get it out. But it was, I wasn't working hard. It was easy. He just didn't want to work.
Did he stay around and meet with you to talk to you?
Or? Well, we always came in. They left when the whistle blew. We were to be there and ready to go to work when the whistle blew. And he'd be around for a short time after the whistle blew, long enough to tell me that I was being plain idiot for... Of course, my boss always told his boss how much faster we were. Our crew was getting out the work, and day shift didn't appreciate us at all.
How big was your crew?
Oh, I don't know. There must have been 15 or 20 of us on this one job.
Did you become friends with people that you met at work?
Only on the job. I never was a joiner. I never, I had too far to drive. I drove from Baldwin Park to Long Beach. It's 25 miles. And most of them lived in apartments in Long Beach. And a lot of them were single girls or other women with families. So what time we had, get home at 1 o'clock in the morning, you didn't have time for a lot of socializing. And you only had one day off during the week. So you did very little socializing on your one day off. I used to get letters, Christmas cards and things from some of them that I worked with during the war. But the last one, I think, passed away last year. She was really up, getting close to 90. She was her late 50s. When I knew her down there.
Can you describe a typical day for me that you would have during that time?
A typical day would be getting up about 10:30, 11 o'clock. My mother was working half day at a feeder plant in El Monte, and she would stop at the grocery store, the meat market. And some days I'd get up, start the laundry, or I would go to the market, do the heavy shopping. I'd be eating breakfast when she was home for lunch. Then you'd go to work. Well, we were working 10 hours. 9 hour days. Get off at 1 o'clock, go 12:30, get home by 1 o'clock, get off at 12, come home. Sometimes you're too hepped up to go right to bed, write letters. Read a little while. Try to get some sleep. It was just, your days were very repetitious. You just didn't, nothing to bury at all. You just didn't... once in a while you'd go shopping, squeeze in an hour and get your hair done. But it was rough, trying to get enough time, enough rest.
Were you able to spend much time with your children?
No, they went to school full day. And they would get up, when I came in at night, they'd get up and come in the bathroom with me or the girls would, while I washed up, bathed, got ready for bed. But that always meant they woke up in the middle of the night, so their sleep was always disturbed too. Sundays I used to plan on taking them. Oh, we take the red car and go to Long Beach, spend the day at the beach or something like that. When you're making less than $40 a month or $40 a week, well, you don't do a lot of you don't take a lot of excursions, that's for sure.